And welcome to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, I'll explain why these things are happening and what it means to you and to your family. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through His Torah, which means teaching, not law, and speaking of family by way of His covenant, of which there is only one. If you are rational, this will be the best part of today's program. Our phone number, if you'd like to question, criticize, or affirm anything I have to say, is 877-300-7645. And if you're just seeking verification, if you would prefer just to be able to examine the evidence behind the conclusions you're going to hear today, I would encourage you to visit introtogod.org, yadayah.com, prophetofdoom.net, questioningpaul.com. During the preview to the show this morning, Scott, my producer, had shared with me a audio clip that he had of the hypocritical President of the United States saying one thing 3 years ago and contradicting it as clearly as words allow this week. It is just one of thousands of examples as to why we ought not trust politicians, no matter what stripe they are, no matter what color, blue or red, they bear. They just aren't trustworthy. They will say whatever it is that tickles people's ears and have no conviction themselves. So here first is a clip that was at a press conference where the president was asked a question and he answered it, and then followed by a statement that he makes with great oratory and great verve in his voice, where he goes about contradicting the answer with great passion that he had given just 3 years earlier. Scott, go ahead and play those clips.
Back on the economy, Mr. President, people are criticizing this road recovery plan. Specifically, there are reports in the Washington Post that say that the African-American unemployment rate will go to 20% by the end of this year. And then you've had your chairman of economic advisors say the target intervention may come next year if nothing changes. Why not target intervention now to stop the bloodletting in the black unemployment rate?
Well, look. First of all, we know that when the African American unemployment rate, the Latino unemployment rate, are consistently higher than the national average. And so, if the economy as a whole is doing poorly, then you know that the African American community is going to be doing poorly, and they're going to be hit even harder. The best thing that I can do for the African-American community or the Latino community or the Asian community, whatever community, is to get the economy as a whole moving. If I don't do, hold on one second. Let me answer the question. If I don't do that, then I'm not going to be able to help anybody.
And then This is what he says on Friday. This is what
he says. By the way, if you just stop there, if I'm not able to do that, if I'm not able to get the economy moving, I'm not able to help anybody. Well, he's been in office 3.5 years. The economy is not moving. Therefore, he has not helped anyone. Therefore, he ought to remove himself from running again, and no one ought vote for him.
Yep, and here's what he said on Friday for the Iowa thing right before the Democratic National Convention.
Okay.
They have tried to sell us these tired, trickle-down, you're-on-your-own policies before. They did not work. They've never worked. They won't create jobs. They won't cut our deficit. They will not strengthen our middle class. They are not a plan to move our country forward.
All right, so that's a direct contradiction of what he had said 3 years ago, that the economy as a whole has to improve, and that he, as the chief planner, has to improve it to help those at the bottom rungs of the economy, which he would view as the unemployed, African-Americans and Hispanic-Americans. And then he speaks of the very plan that is designed to raise all ships, the supply-side economics, which is to encourage growth in manufacturing so that we increase the supply aspect of our economy, which rises the entire economy, causing everyone to benefit. That plan, which was labeled trickle-down as opposed to supply-side because it actually worked, and so the only rebuttal that those who were socialists had against it was to mislabel it. The you're-on-your-own aspect, though, speaks to free enterprise. In the free enterprise system, you are on your own. That is the beauty of the free enterprise system. It's why it works. And the moment that's changed to socialism and communism, you're not on your own, it fails. So just as his state, not his, his most recent State of the Union address, where this president spent the first half an hour of that State of the Union address associating the U.S. economy with the U.S. military, saying that he would like to run the economy like the U.S. military. When the U.S. military, there is total command and control. It is a centrally controlled organization where there is no free will. And so he wants, and his words tell you that he wants socialism, communism. Now, if there's anything that has not worked, it is communism. Look at the USSR and how it crumbled. Look at China as a communist country and now as a country employing free enterprise principles. Look at North Korea as one of the world's last bastions of communism, both politically and economically. If you want to know something that does not work, it would be socialism and communism, the very thing this president wants. As for supply-side economics, that's what was deployed during the Reagan administration. It was based upon Professor Laffer of USC. He realized that statistically, when we lowered tax rates, the economy prospered at such a level that the government actually took in more revenue with lower taxes. Because the only way that you can increase the size of the economy, that you can cause economic recovery and growth, is to diminish regulation and to diminish taxation on businesses and on individuals engaged in the economy. Professor Laffer used statistics to show, history to demonstrate and to prove his point, and then during the Reagan administration it was proven again. Now, you may say, oh, but that's not what the Democrats tell us. They tell us that during the Reagan administration, trickle-down failed. Well, Reagan's use of lowering taxes substantially to not only stop the economic recession that we were in, but to create a vibrant period of growth that lasted for a decade and a half after his reduction of taxes. Well, that worked beautifully. Well, the government did take in more revenue on lower taxation. Why the supply side performed in terms of everyone doing better. Reagan made the tremendous mistake of increasing the U.S. military budget radically. He wanted a 600-ship Navy. His commitments to the military squandered the money that he saved. And so while Reagan was wise, as were Americans, to support supply side, it worked. And the moment we went away from it and began to increase taxes on the most productive Americans and to increase taxes on corporations so that they're amongst the highest in the world now, our economy faltered. And this president wants to increase them again, just like FDR did, the very thing that prolonged the Great Recession, taking it from a recession to making it a Great Depression. It was all based upon raising taxes, stifling the economy. And so what you have here is a president who sounds good. He sounds in control. He sounds presidential. His voice is powerful. He is articulate. And sadly, what he says prevails, because the vast preponderance of Americans don't understand the economy, do not understand that you can't continue to have deficits, so that now our aggregate deficit is $16 trillion, almost 110% of our gross domestic product, that we have bankrupt our nation, that we have engaged in economic pedophilia based upon our own broken moral compass. We have indulged ourselves and passed the burden onto our children. We have destroyed our children's future. All because politicians like this one have chosen to tickle our ears to get reelected. And by the way, it's no better on the other side of the aisle. You know, George Bush inherited a budget surplus, and he turned it into the largest deficit in American history. He went from $350 billion positive to $1.4 billion, trillion dollars negative. And so it's not about which side of the aisle. It's about understanding economics and economic schemes and how fiat money and central banks and government malfeasance and politicians' lies like this one all lead to the same place. And it is to the destruction of the economy. It is the bane, to use the term that has been trashed around a lot these days, it is the bane of democracy. It's why our founding fathers said democracy was a horrible thing. It is the tyranny of the majority over the minority. And today, that tyranny is all about stealing from productive people and giving it to those who no longer work, who don't want to work. 50% of Americans are net beneficiaries of government handouts. They pay no tax whatsoever. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back after the break.
On the average.
Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. For those who are just joining us this morning, feel free to call and challenge anything you hear or engage in the conversation, 877-300-7645. Just one last thought before we move on to other news this morning. It is amazing how easily people are persuaded by articulate speakers. The very thing that Obama in his campaign rhetoric was condemning is the only solution that has ever worked. Supply-side economics. You are on your own, which is the free enterprise system. The free enterprise system and supply-side, where you make it easier, more possible, where you encourage productivity, particularly in the manufacturing sector, where you literally do everything that government can do to get out of the way so that government stops being a hindrance to the economy. And when that happens, there are jobs galore for everyone. There is opportunity for everyone. There is growth, which everyone can participate in. It is the only system that works. It's the system that actually built America. And that's the system that he is condemning. It's free enterprise. You are on your own. Supply side, let's encourage manufacturing and productivity. as opposed to let's penalize it through ever higher taxes. And the very thing that he was touting, which is you're not on your own, let the government take care of you, is communism. It has never worked. It never will work. But ignorant of history, ignorant of economic reality, the vast preponderance of people, including all of the journalists who listened to him, not only didn't recognize that he had contradicted himself, but they didn't recognize that what he said on both sides, what he promoted as true was false, what he's condemned as false was true. You know, this is the very man that said, if I can't fix the economy in 3 years, call me former President Obama. Well, the reality is that the only way that a president can fix the economy is to get the U.S. government out of the economy, to stop penalizing success by higher tax rates on those who are the most productive, by diminishing regulation. And this president has done exactly the opposite. It's why the economy is still broken. It's why we should call him former President Obama. Moving on to something that was incredibly sad in the news over the weekend. We're going to turn our attention to Afghanistan. We're going to witness a disease that is even worse than politics. There is one. More polluting, more corrupting, more beguiling than politics. That disease is religion. An adolescent boy and a very young girl have both been beheaded in two separate incidences in Afghanistan, local officials and police said. In the latest brazen attacks that have raised fresh questions about a splintering Taliban. This Reuters journalist, given grim news that a young boy, adolescents, preteen boy and a preteen girl, were both beheaded and their bodies and their heads displayed publicly. And their conclusion was, the problem is that the Taliban is splintering. That's the reason this happened. I mean, think of the ignorance, of the lack of good judgment that would cause you to go that direction with that news. You know, this would be a person who, if the Taliban is splintering, that's bad, because how are we going to negotiate a peace terms with them if they're splintering? And if the Taliban is strong, then what have we been doing in Afghanistan? I mean, this is one of those things where it doesn't matter if they're unified, monolithic, or fracturing all over the place. It's bad either way. Why even make that kind of a statement? Moreover, there is no evidence that this was perpetrated by the Taliban. As a matter of fact, the Taliban said, we didn't do it. The Taliban takes credit for almost every gruesome, ghoulish thing they do. And this they denied. They said, no, we didn't do that. This is the kind of stuff that happens every day in Islam. The thing that killed these two children caused someone to be so proud of cutting off their heads that they would post them publicly is Islam. And we'll return to this story after the break. I am Yatta. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yatta, 877-300-7645, if you wish to engage in this conversation. You know, it's interesting that during a time that the Muslims in Afghanistan and Iraq were particularly proud of their beheadings, where they would capture an American, often civilians, but sometimes military, usually civilians, however. And then they would parade them in front of a poster that said, Allahu Akbar, Allah is greater. and then read verses of the Quran before listening to the victim beg for their lives and then listening to that person drowned in their own blood as they sawed off their head with their knives, that the U.S. media would never show those clips. And they said, oh, they're just too gruesome. We cannot show them. And during that time, I was always one to say, no, the opposite is true. We used to always post them on the Prophet of Doom site. And the reason we posted them on prophetofdoom.net is because if you see that, if you listen to someone recite the Quran in front of a poster that says Allah is greater and perpetrates such a gruesome act in the name of your religion, yeah, it might motivate a few people to say, maybe the problem is Islam. Maybe I ought to learn something about Islam before that person whose throat is being cut is my sons or daughters. A great lesson was squandered when we decided to censor the news. Returning to this story, a 12-year-old boy was kidnapped and killed in southern Kandahar province on Wednesday, his severed head placed near his body to send a warning. The brother of the boy was a member of the Afghan local police. The brother of the boy. That's the best they could do. I think I've come to understand Islam pretty well. They would, fundamentalist Muslims will kill go after the son if they can't kill the father. They don't kill brothers. This was not a Taliban killing. But anyway, the brother of the boy was a member of the Afghan local police, a U.S.-trained militia charged with making Afghans in Kandahar feel more secure, an Afghani spokesman said. And so the Afghani spokesman says it's a Taliban warning to the ALP and to others who support the government, Fizzle said of the killing, which happened in his district. No evidence of that. Taliban spokesman Qari Yusuf denied the group was involved. Now, what the problem here is Islam. Honor killings in Islam are rampant. Who knows what this boy is sensed to have done? Now, do I blame the boy for his death? Of course not. I'm blaming Islam for his death because of the savage nature of Sharia law. You know, we read the Red Team report from the U.S. military where they canvassed the widest cross-section of U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan in terms of why they despise the Afghani people, which they do. They despise them. And the cruelty to animals, and particularly to dogs, was listed as a reason. Bachi Ba, where they take young boys and the Afghani police in particular, take them and sodomize them over and over again for weeks on end, was one of the reasons. Their abuse of women was another reason. This is ingrained in the Islamic culture, what you are seeing here. It is a savage religion founded by a savage man in the case of Muhammad. Separately, completely different, wholly unrelated, a 6-year-old girl was beheaded in eastern Kapisa on Thursday, said the local police chief. We're not sure if she was beheaded by her family or by the Taliban. Imagine that. A 6-year-old girl, and they suspect that the family, which is probably the case, chose to behead her. But we know the Taliban control the area. He added that he could not send investigators into the area for fears of their safety. Americans with the most mighty military in the world have been in the tiny country of Afghanistan now for 11 years. And yet the Taliban still control the country. What does that tell you about the future fate of Afghanistan? The murders follow the shooting or beheading of 17 teenagers. This was a couple of weeks ago, attending a party in Southern Helmand. 17 teenagers were shot, many of them beheaded, just, I guess, a week and a half ago. Now, officials said that was the work of the Taliban, too, blaming it on the Taliban, not on Islam. Taliban denied those charges. It is Islam that denounces partying. It's Islam that denounces music. It's Islam that denounces men and women being together in a social setting. Islam is the cause. It is the problem. It is the curse. That massacre, this article says, raised fresh concerns about Taliban's grip on their scattered fighters amid on and off again peace moves by the group with the Afghani government. It also suggested that there are grassroots insurgent fighters who are not in the mood for compromise. So if the Taliban is monolithic, if they're in total control, which they are of wide swaths of Afghanistan, then according to this journalist, that's good. But if they're splintered, oh, that's bad. Well, what did the United States go in there to try to do? Wasn't it to shatter the Taliban? And now that this journalist thinks the Taliban is shattered, oh, that's bad. What, if the Taliban was whole and in complete charge, you don't think that little girls and little boys would be beheaded? Taliban has brutally killed so many innocents. Well, that's not to say that the United States invasion of that country to oust the Taliban was moral. It was not. Because we went in there supporting Islam. Sharia law reigns in Afghanistan. The moment we leave, it will be as if we were never there. Except so many little children will be murdered by the returning Taliban. It will be Vietnam all over again. We were too stupid as a nation to learn that lesson. This is what the one official that they could reach, obviously someone who is paid by America to be anti-Taliban, said. What we are seeing could be a new tactic by the Taliban to behead civilians to intimidate the population. No, Faisal, what we're witnessing is Islam. It's unrelated to the Taliban. The Taliban just happens to be Islamic. In Kandahar, Ziri district, officials also said on Friday that a 16-year-old boy accused by the Taliban of spying for the government was beheaded after he was skinned alive. This is a savage religion. It is a savage religion because the God of Islam is savage. The God of Islam is one that focuses on people's heads, their throats, their faces, pouring molten pitch down their throats, boiling water on their heads. It is a God who is depicted in the Quran in hell of ripping the skin off live victims, replacing that skin so that Allah can rip it off again. The religion is savage because the God of Islam is savage. Allah is Satan. Here's another story that speaks to the moral collapse, the moral decay, the moral decadence that is Islam. Although you'll find this time the CNN not only doesn't identify the problem with Islam, but actually has a line at the end of the story to try to exonerate the religion from the very hell that it has perpetrated on those who are the most defenseless. This from CNN. Zara married more than a year ago in the Middle East. Shortly thereafter, she and her husband, along with their two children, moved to Britain for work. Why would they have to move to Britain for work? Because there is no economic opportunity in Islamic countries. As a whole, they are the most impoverished places on earth. And they are impoverished because the only way for economic opportunity to take root is for people that are willing to invest their money and their time to know that if they prevail, that they will reap the benefits. and that there has to be a rule of law for people to be willing to risk. And if you change the rules all of the time, if there are no rules, if lying is considered good, if stealing as it is in Islam is considered good, then there can be no economic opportunity. It's why there has never been a flourishing Islamic culture. Even during its golden era, those 100 years after Muhammad's death, it was only golden because they ravaged the rest of the world. They raped the rest of the world. They benefited from the labor of others, having stolen what others produced. So that's why Zahra's family moved to Britain. There was no work, no opportunity, no hope in Islam. This greatest contrast here happens to be in Yisrael. If you go from an Israeli controlled area of Yisrael to one controlled by the Palestinian Authority, which is the PLO or Hamas in Gaza, if you cross the border, what you see is very similar to what those of us who actually crossed the border between East and West in Berlin and Eastern Western Europe saw. Though the contrast in Islam is even more stark. The reason they want to destroy Israel is because Israel proves that Islam is rotten to the core. Once you cross the border into an Islamic-controlled area, there is no hope. No one is working. No one. Stores, shops are all shuttered. People mow the streets with guns. There is nothing. It is total hopelessness. And on the other side of the border, hope abounds. Islam is what destroys all hope, corrupting everything that it touches. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back with this story after the break. 877-300-7645. To Shattering Myths. Scott and I were talking briefly during the break, and you know, while we're focusing here, having transitioned from the evil of politics to the evil of religion, and are focusing on the evil that is Islam now with the second story on Islam, with this particular woman being abused with her own family ordering her death. It is important to recognize that Islam alone is not the only evil religion. It is the most vicious religion today. It is the most uncivilized religion today. It is the religion today that is responsible for 99% of all terrorist acts that are perpetrated at this time. But for better part of 1500 years, the Roman Catholic Church was the most evil institution on planet Earth, the most destructive, the most oppressive, the most beguiling. And if you just wanted to look at the most deadly institution on earth, because Islam is so incompetent, while it is vicious, where it is uncivilized, where it is grotesquely immoral, the deadliest institution on earth today is socialist secular humanism. Nazi Germany, the USSR, and Red China, the People's Republic of China, that those nations during the heyday of communism, as Mao took over the country, killed 40 million of his own people. Stalin killed 30 million of his people. And, of course, Hitler was a genocidal maniac. And so it is the deadliest religion on planet Earth today is socialist secular humanism. We're focusing on Islam because by showing the malfeasance of Islam, by revealing how corrupted it is, sometimes by seeing the horrible, beguiling, and destructive nature of a religion, people are triggered to say, well, you know, if that religion is rotten and we're told that it is an Abrahamic religion like someone else's religion, that it might trigger them to question their own. And so it is why we do focus our morning segment on such things. Well, continuing with this story from CNN, it said, in Great Britain, her husband began to drink heavily. He became especially violent, routinely holding a knife to Zara's throat. And he started raping me, which affected me mentally, causing lots of stress and the relationship between me and my sons. The idea of rape, by the way, is legal in Islam. A man can rape anyone he wishes to. Rape is considered okay in Islam. The Quran says that sex with your captives, with your slaves, is fine. In fact, the Quran says, well, we prefer you not to prostitute your slaves, but if you wish to prostitute them, Allah will forgive you. Allah will forgive you. So even prostituting your wives, who are your slaves, is legal in Islam because of what Allah says in the Quran. So as this story continues, he said, I could not speak out because I learned that to speak out of your husband to anyone outside of the family is a big shame. Yes. And yet this journalist couldn't mention Islam. In Islam, to say my husband is holding a knife to my throat and is raping me is not a shame on the husband. In Islam, it is a shame on the wife. In Islam, in any Islamic culture, when a woman is raped, she goes to jail for adultery. And the perpetrator is exonerated. That is the upside-down nature of this religion. It is a religion conceived by Satan, where everything that is good is bad, everything that is bad is good. Quote, so I was struggling between Eastern culture with what I learned from Western culture, where I should live with freedom, equality, and justice. I found it difficult. She says she still finds it difficult. The reality is that she wasn't struggling between Eastern culture and Western culture. She was struggling between being raised a Muslim, where she, as the victim, is the guilty party, where as a woman, she has no freedom. She was struggling between the indoctrination of that horrible religion and a culture that was based initially on the truths contained in Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And so, rather than freedom, Allah wants submission. And so her struggle was between Islam and the West. And she found it difficult to deal with that. We will return to this story tomorrow, because after the break, we're going to turn our attention to the Torah, which is the only reliable source of freedom, of equality, and justice ever presented to humankind. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of